The Australian government, Marcel, expects GDP growth of 3% in 2018. That's according to documents on the economic agenda that have been submitted to the group of G20 Leaders Summit. Why then are you shorting the Australian economy?
We're shorting the Australian stock market, so I will call time on you immediately. Steve, in the land of economics, and both myself and Neil College, who are the principals of Arminius Capital, Neil, as you know, was the head of research at the Queensland Investment Corporation, so I assure you steadfastly, my friend, that we are not betraying our country. So the distinction between the share market and the economy, the real economy, is that in economic terms, you can build these models called economic leading indicator models, and you can chuck the stock market into one of those. And what that will tell you is that there will be somewhere between a 10-month to 18-month lead time where the stock market's heading, and that'll actually tell you where the economy is heading. Okay? So we are getting ahead of the curve. We obviously realise that the Australian stock market is constituted pretty much by the big four banks, BHP, Rio and Telstra, and then you've got a few other big boys like Wesfarmers and what have you. But in Australia, those six or seven companies actually constitute almost half the stock market. Okay, so what we are doing, and as we spoke about
that seems worrying to me as an amateur. Is that worrying? It doesn't seem terribly broad or deep.
It's not. It's nothing to be worried about. It's just something to be cognizant of.
Okay.
That when you are making a capital markets investment in the Australian stock market, you are literally buying a couple of banks and a couple of mining stocks. Okay,
right.
This is one of the primary reasons why we are not invested primarily in Australia. While we invest overseas, because in markets such as America, there are entire industries that you cannot have access to in Australia. Massive pharmaceutical, biotech opportunities in the US, defence companies, obviously, and we don't actually make motor cars here anymore, Steve. So you couldn't even buy Aussie Holden or Aussie Ford shares if you wanted to, but you can go to America and you can buy anything in Detroit, and then you've got that little upstart making
Tesla.
Electric cars as well, right? Mm-hmm. So you got a vast buffet of stocks to select from. So our problem here is that, as we spoke about a month ago, and I'm very happy to be called back post 30th of June, and I'm just waiting for you to tell me how our hedge fund performed in the financial year ending 30th of June 16.
I'll let you tell me later.
Oh, stop it. Okay, I will. So we did 16.4% for the 12 months to the 30th of June 2017. Now, when I was on this show last time, I unfortunately had to remind the viewers that
listeners.
Sorry.
You're on TV too much.
I know, I'm
You're
sorry.
You're on television too much.
Well, I should be on here more
this
often.
Radio.
This is the difference.
The theatre of the mind, dear chap.
Amen. So 11.8%, the big four banks fell in 4 weeks in the month of May alone. And again, I don't have to tell people that BHP currently at $23 was actually around $40 a bit over 12 months ago. So our position is that we basically got the timing right. So that's what we get paid to do. And we got out of the way of the train wreck. And we hold on to the profits. So the mantra of our hedge fund, Steve, is to enjoy the upside. So when the stock market goes up, to make sure that you capture that in your numbers, and then don't give it away when the stock market falls. It's very simple.
My guest is Marcel von Pfeiffer from Arminius Capital. He has a grin that is wider than this studio, because he has bet, or his hedge fund has bet against the Australian stock market and made, what was the figure, 16.4% as a result.
Yep. And we don't bet, by the way. We take positions.
Of course you do.
We're not in the pub now, Mr. Austin.
This is ABC Radio Brisbane at 17 minutes to 10. Conversations preview with Richard Feidler at 5 minutes to 10. 20 years ago, I read in the papers this week that Mahathir Mohamad, the former Prime Minister of Malaysia, really hates people like you.
Yes.
And in particular, blokes like George Soros, because 20 years ago, we had the Asian financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And the sovereign state of Malaysia lost against Mr. Soros. So just there's been a few sort of benchmarks along the way. So just go back 20 years.
Yeah. Well, I was at university. So I'm just a spring chicken, Steve. I'm only 42 years of age. So I was studying, and it was very funny because twice in my Korea, obviously with the notable occurrence of the GFC, which was only 10 years ago, actually, this year. So we've got a fascinating sort of celebration of horrific anniversaries in 2017. So I remember when I was at university remembering learning economics in high school, and one of the textbooks was, I think I'm paraphrasing here, but it was effectively called The Rise of the Mini Dragons. So I finish high school. I'm like, oh, goody, I'm going to go and study business, go to university, and then you basically have this horrific meltdown in Asia. Dr. Mahathir, who has a doctorate in economics, like he's a very, very smart guy, he called George Soros all the names under the sun.
It's not broadcastable. Some of them.
like, literally petulant children. They both went at it. Racist slurs. George Soros, as you know, is a Hungarian Jew. Dr. Mahathir reminded him of that and told him that there was a conspiracy against the Muslim people of Malaysia. But that's a little too single-minded, because Mr. Soros was not just targeting Malaysia. He was also destroying the entire Indonesian economy. Indonesia's currency fell over 80%. The GDP fell about 13%. So literally entire countries were destroyed. So the difference I must bring to your attention between what Mr. Soros did in the Asian financial crisis and what we do is here's what is called a targeted short seller. So he took huge concentrated positions or bets, shall we say. He has a track record of doing this. He broke the Bank of England.
Yeah, famously.
Famously.
Beat the Bank of England, yes.
Broke. So beat them and broke them.
It wasn't an anti-Muslim or an anti-Asian thing. He did it to England as well.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I don't actually know what the religious constituency is of England, but anyway, he did it to them too.
In flux, I think we could say.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, look, Thailand, Malaysia, who else was there? Indonesia, South Korea. You literally had the situation where they lost millions of jobs. People committed suicide. Companies defaulted, obviously, and governments fell. That was 20 years ago.
10 years ago. So we're going through these. I want to bring us up to this point in time. 10 years ago, the company Bear Stearns went belly up in the United States. Why? In a sentence, in a paragraph.
They had two hedge funds. And I'm going to qualify this. They had two hedge funds that invested in very leveraged things called MBSs, mortgage-backed securities, and CDOs, collateralized debt obligations. Both of those two things caused the GFC. They had two hedge funds that had about $20 billion in them. The actual market capitalization of Bear Stearns, the listed company, was about $20 billion before the GFC, and they were managing as much as the company was worth. They got the bets wrong. In the space of about 2 weeks, they lost about 18% of that $20 billion in the two hedge funds. And then you had what you hadn't seen for about 100 years, which was in Western society, a bank run. They shut the doors.
You haven't seen one of those since the 1930s.
Yeah, been a long time, been a long time. And you could also say it's been a long time coming. JP Morgan, with Jamie Dimon at the helm, stepped in with the assistance of money lent to him by the Federal Reserve, a line of credit of about $30 billion, and he bought it and said, post, that it was the dumbest thing he ever did. It cost him. He bought Bear Stearns. The Fed persuaded him to buy Bear Stearns and also Washington Mutual, and it cost him, and the figure is astronomical, it cost him over $10 billion in actual associated takeover fees, most probably which went to M&A lawyers.
My M&A being merger and acquisitions.
Sorry, yeah.
My guest is Marcel von Pfeiffer. He's one of the principals of the hedge fund of Arminius Capital. This is ABC Radio Brisbane. It's 13 minutes to 10. We're going back. We've looked at the 20-year mark, the 10-year mark of the global financial crisis. There were predictions that around this time, this year, once again, it would all come crashing down. Now, I thought that normally sort of happened in the September-October period, but Michael Pascoe wrote, I think it was around this time, July, was when the predictions by certain people were that it's all over again.
Yes.
This month.
Yep. This time it's different.
This time it's different. Okay. tell me why.
Yeah. Well, I've got a grin on my face, but it's not. It's for very different reasons. Now, look, there's an old mantra, Steve, that says a broken clock is right twice a day. Okay. In financial markets, returns are distributed across. Look, every 10 years, you're going to have one or two years where you have a major kerfuffle, and that's a very theoretically high-level economic term, kerfuffle.
Years of university and real-world training to learn the word kerfuffle.
Yes. Years on Wall Street and in London, yes. Mm-hmm. So if you basically sit there for 10 years and you write newsletters and you go on TV and you go on radio and you tell people that there's a crash coming, you'll be right eventually. You'll get there. So a broken clock is right twice a day.
So you can predict doom. Eventually you'll be right when you predict doom.
Yes, okay. Yes. And people forget. I mean, people hailed Nouriel Roubini as the Messiah returned in economics when the GFC blew up. But he was basically, he'd been on the street corner with a placard over his shoulders holding the banner like for 20 years saying that this is going to happen. And he could have been there for 40 and it still would have happened anyway every 10 years. So it actually happens every 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. So, look, there are concerns that we have in the global economic climate. Again, as you led the introduction of me so glamorously, Steve, telling me that I'm betraying my country by shorting BHP. But the reality is that there are, the commodity super cycle is dead in Australia, so we really struggle to find any good reason to hold BHP. But does that mean that the entire world and the Australian economy is going to fall off a cliff? No, of course not. So to the people, to the naysayers who suggest perhaps that we are going to have another GFC July this year, I'm very sorry to tell them that my hedge fund is not positioned that way, and if they're right, I will lose a lot of money. But seasonally speaking, October and even November is actually the weakest months of the year. But these type of people, they have a long litany of reasons as to why they think Chicken Little is their best mate. But you go through, like, repetitively once a year. You know, and Jim Rogers is a poignant example of this. So Jim was George Soros's founding partner at Soros's hedge fund Quantum Fund. Jim made so much money breaking the Bank of England and destroying Asia that he retired. I think he was in his mid-30s. So he now just traipses around the world doing, like, really, really fun things. And I read something, I'm not sure if it was on Bloomberg or FactSet news service the other week, and it had actually... So Jim is one of these people you're referring to, and he's calling for another cataclysmic event going to beset us in 2017. And the article, some very clever journo, has actually gone back through Jim Rogers' news feed over the past 10 years, and it's just hilarious. Like, he pulls out this call every 6 months. It's like, no, by December this year, something very, very bad will happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so look, you're always going to have people like that. But capital markets, it's what we call in economics a zero-sum game, okay? So there's always going to be one person on either side of the trade. So for every person who thinks something's going to go down, there is a guy or a lady sitting on the screen somewhere else in the world who actually thinks it's going to go up. So I welcome people like that because somebody has to take the other side of our trade, Steve.
This is ABC Brisbane. The debt that happened, that was purchased, went from private debt to public debt when the Federal Reserve bought or helped people buy a lot of debt. What happened? Yep. It's still sitting on the books, isn't it? It's still all that debt of 10 years ago. It's still floating around somewhere, isn't it?
It is floating around. And this is, you're probably alluding to the remarks that were made when the Fed met their June meeting, the minutes that have just been released. So they have a very, very difficult decision to make. This money that's sitting around, as you put it, there's $4.5 trillion, with a T, trillion dollars of this money literally sitting around, Steve, and it's sitting on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. They must monetize this debt at some point in time, which is basically, put into English, they basically have to wash the money. Okay, so they've got to work it back.
If organized crime does it, it's illegal. If the Federal Reserve does it, it's an economic masterstroke.
Oh, they're a private institution.
Okay,
so they're not the government. You can accuse them what you want. So the Federal Reserve, it must monetize this $4.5 trillion dollars in debt. Inflation in America is 1.9% currently, Steve. So it is actually a little bit too low. There are sincere, genuine concerns from traditionalist economists who think that with US unemployment being 4.3%, like, isn't that an incredibly low number, you know, given where we've been in the since the GFC in the States,
yep.
They think that 4.3% will overheat the economy. Okay, so there's people pushing
for the US economy.
The US economy, yep. Yes. So they're pushing for the Fed to keep raising interest rates to release this $4.5 trillion, move it back into the economy. And that'll happen, and it kind of has to happen over time. And what's really come to the fore in the last 6 months of the Fed communiques, Steve, is that they are actually finally listening to this, and they're going to start doing it.
When?
Janet, possibly later this year.
Janet Yellen.
Dr. Janet Yellen, who's the chair of the Federal Reserve. Her tenure, her first term is up in early 2018. We are yet to get any clear indication from President Trump as to whether he will extend her tenure to a second term. My professional opinion, by the way that she speaks, by gauging the way that she speaks and the data that she refers to in her presentations, I think that they're going to commence winding down the QE program later this year, calendar 2017.
So that debt will start to come into the economy of the United States, and I assume then wash around the world.
Yep.
And what will the effect of that be? Where could we see this appear here in Australia, anywhere?
It's such a broad question. The real answer is, do you believe, you know, all these people, like the naysayers that we spoke about, the pending doom, right? Part of their rationale for their argument that the world's going to blow up later this year is that they look at countries like America, who has an inordinate amount of debt on issue, you know, gross debt probably approaching 180% of GDP or so, so like something astronomically high. The Japanese, as we know, gross debt to GDP is about 220% of the economy, like colossal amounts of debt out washing around. But what the last 4 or 5 years has actually demonstrated to us is that what I learnt in university is that if you issue so much debt, you know, they'll just destroy your currency. It just hasn't happened. Like it really hasn't happened. So if there is an extension of debt issuance, or if this money comes into the economy, then the real question will be, what does that do to people's inflationary expectations? Okay, do they actually think that this will force up the price of living, or will it make debt cheaper? Will it make debt more expensive? And again, Steve, that's probably a conversation for another interview. But it is going to be completely market driven.
I ask you this because when Michael Lewis's book was turned into a movie, The Big Short, I got you to take me and explain.
It was a good night.
What was happening?
I think, speaking of inflation, I think I paid, $18 for a bucket of popcorn? do you remember that? I came back to sit down beside you, and my face was ashen white, and you said, "Are you feeling sick?" And I said, "Yes, I am. I just bought a Choc Top and a box of popcorn for $18.
So here you are. You're a hedge fund manager. You know, you're ruling the world economically, and you can't afford a box of popcorn.
Now, I will draw you up there. We are value hunters. This is why I run a hedge fund, is that I want to arbitrage away the price of an $18 box of popcorn. I'd rather go to Aldi and buy something cheaper than carry it into the cinema. That's called arbitrage.
Well, I wanted to know if Michael Lewis, I think, did you, sorry, Richard
Feynman. Yeah, he was there.
Did you interview Michael Lewis?
No, I didn't, but I saw The Big Short, though. It's an extraordinary film, yeah.
Well, I got this bloke to take me and explain what was happening.
We met in the line.
That's right, it was terrific,
And I'm waiting for episode 2 of The Big Short.
Oh, she's a coming, Steve. She's a coming.
And what will it look like?
I don't know. Right. And this is the thing. Right, but what I can guarantee you is that whatever 99% of the economic commentary it put in front of you and say this is what the next GFC will look like, I can guarantee you that that is not what it'll look like. Guarantee.
That's what happened last time. That's for sure.
Yeah. Guarantee.
Marcel von Pfeiffer, thank you so much for coming in.
Most welcome. Take care. Thank you.